The content of this program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. Hello and welcome to Heard Any Good Books Lately? A program from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is brought to you by the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons, all interested in supporting the library and the services it provides. The Friends Group was founded in 1989 and now has more than 300 members across North Carolina. If you'd like to join the Friends Group yourself, you'll have information available to you right at the end of this program. Thanks for joining me today. I'm your host, George Douglas. This program is all about books, with special emphasis on those available from the North Carolina Library for the Blind. Now, the library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection. Books and magazines are available in large print, braille, and talking books as well, both digital and cassette. Now, the library has more than 11,000 patrons across the state. If you're not a patron but are interested in becoming one, I'll have more information about that as well at the end of this program. This month, we'll take a look at some of the most popular books checked out during the month of June 2016 at the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. We begin the program today by taking a look at a novel by the name of Breakdown, a V.I. Warshawski novel by Sarah Paretsky. Here's the summary. Breakdown begins with a call to V.I. Warshawski from her cousin Petra, who asks her to rescue a group of tween girls at the Mount Moriah Cemetery. Vic is at a glamorous evening event with her longtime reporter friend, Murray Ryerson. The glitzy party is in celebration of the 10th anniversary of Wade Lawler's uber-successful TV talk show that showcases his views on life, politics, and culture, values that are directly the opposite of Vic's. Now, she's impressed but appalled by the list of influential guests. Wade and Global Entertainment Networks have power in the industry in which Murray works. Despite appearances, Vic ducks out to respond to the call for help. Upon arriving at the cemetery, she discovers seven girls out after curfew getting ready to reenact a ceremony from a popular book series that features vampires, shapeshifters, and other paranormal activities. The last thing they're expecting is to find a corpse with a metal rod through the heart. Vic steps in and gets the girls out of the cemetery before the police arrive. She deals with the cops, then meets up with Petra to get the story. Petra, who works at the Molina Foundation, explains that the tweens belong to a book club that is part of a program that brings together daughters of privilege with penniless immigrants. Now, Vic wakes up the next morning to a call from Murray, demanding to know why she didn't tell him about the dead body and the girls involved. It turns out the body is that of Private Detective Miles Wuchnick, a consultant to Vic's ex-husband's law firm. The group includes the daughter of Sophie Durango, a liberal candidate for the U.S. Senate from the state of Illinois, and the granddaughter of Chaim Salanter, a wealthy Jewish businessman in the Chicago area. Salanter is head of Durango's campaign finance committee. Even Wade is involved. He is supporting the more conservative candidate. Clearly, there's more to this group of girls than Vic realized. Why was the private eye following the girls? Or was he? And now Wade is already talking about the incident on his show. And did that happen so quickly? How did it happen so quickly? Unexpectedly, Vic also hears from her old friend Leedon Ashford, a lawyer who comes from a wealthy family. Leedon is concerned for her own safety and feels like she is being followed. She's a brilliant woman, but has episodes that debilitate her, and when Vic discovers her at the Rockefeller Chapel, she is barely alive. Something more than Leedon's own demons is chasing her. As Vic delves into her life, she uncovers some suspicious coincidences. It turns out that Wuchnick had visited the state mental hospital where Leedon was receiving treatment. Meanwhile, Wade is using his show to derail Durango's campaign in any way he can, including attacking Salanter's past as a Holocaust survivor. Vic begins to put the pieces of the puzzle together. Potential corruption at the state mental hospital, a Holocaust survivor's past, wrongful murder convictions, and the politics of hate and the media. As usual, with any case that Vic works on, motivations, people, and situations are complex. As a reader, it keeps you guessing as to the outcomes of the murder and mayhem right to the last page. Reviewer Jennifer McCord says she is consistently impressed with the themes that are interwoven in a Sarah Paretsky murder mystery. The subplots keep her stories current with the world in which her readers live. Vic knows how to handle herself as a woman and as a professional in the midst of violence in the city she loves. She is a character who is every bit as memorable as Sam Spade, Spencer, and Sherlock Holmes. And that was about the book Breakdown, a V.I. Warshawski novel by Sarah Paretsky. Now let's take a look at our second book on the popularity list for this month of June 2016. It's called Running Hot by Jane Ann Krentz. Ex-cop Luther Malone, lifelong member of the secretive paranormal organization known as the Arcane Society, is waiting to meet Grace Rehnquist. Hired as an aura reading consultant in the quest for a murder suspect, she's got zero field experience. She's from tiny Eclipse Bay, Oregon. She's a librarian, for heaven's sake. As for Grace, she's not expecting much either from Malone, who walks with a cane and isn't so good with a gun. Nice resume for a bodyguard. But even before they reach their hotel in Maui, where they'll be posing as honeymooners, Grace and Luther feel the electric charge between them. Problem is, they need to remain vigilant day and night because it soon becomes clear there's more going on here. Rogue sensitives, operatives for the underground group Nightshade, are pouring into the luxury resort like there's a convention. Grace recognizes those dark spikes in their auras. She saw the same pattern in someone else in another life, a life she hasn't revealed to Luther or anyone else. And she understands how dangerous these people can be, especially with those para-hunters at their sides. While the pair's employers at Jones & Jones scramble to get them back up, Luther and Grace have to think on their feet. The criminals in their midst aren't just high-level sensitives. They've enhanced their talents with a potent and unpredictable drug. And as Grace knows all too well, if you don't control your powers will control you. That's a book called Running Hot by Jane Ann Krentz. Here's a little bit older book. It was published in 2002 by the very, very popular author Lee Child. It's called Without Fail. Here's the plot. The sixth time's a charm for thriller Meister Child, whose latest escapade starring ex-military cop Jack Reacher is handily his most accomplished and most compelling to date. The suspense-laden plot kicks off with U.S. Secret Service agent M. E. Froelich telling Reacher, "I want to hire you to assassinate the Vice President of the United States." VP-elect Brooke Armstrong has received a series of anonymous death threats, and Froelich needs to uncover their source and ascertain the effectiveness of Armstrong's security detail. Reacher agrees to masquerade as an assassin because he can't resist a challenge and because Froelich had loved his older brother Joe, a Secret Service colleague, killed in a botched operation. As Reacher pieces together an increasingly frustrating puzzle, Child ratchets up the excitement with several breathtaking set pieces, including a Thanksgiving dinner for D.C.'s homeless that turns deadly, a jaw-dropping coup d'etat theater, and a slam-bang finale in Wyoming's mountains. He even extracts tension from mundane events, as when Reacher searches for clues on a security video of an office cleaning crew. The novel's detailed insider's view of political skullduggery is certain to intrigue readers, and the various characters' relationships, handled with careful restraint, provide an added layer. The growing attachment between Froelich and Reacher, both characters' recollections of Joe, Reacher's regard for Francis Neagley, a former colleague whom he calls in for help, and then there's Reacher himself, the stolid, flawed man's man who gives no quarter on any level. Indeed, the novel's final line serves as a precis of this quietly fascinating character. He headed west for the Port Authority and a bus out of town. Very popular book during the month of May. It was called Without Fail by Lee Child. Now, here's another book that goes back to the year 2007 that was very popular as a beach read this summer. It's by who else? James Patterson, along with Maxine Petro. And the book is called The Sixth Target. The Sixth Target was the sixth book in the Women's Murder Club series featuring Lindsay Boxer by author James Patterson and Maxine Petro. And as I mentioned, it was released in 2007, in May of that year. When a horrifying attack leaves one of the four members of the Women's Murder Club struggling for her life, the others fight to keep a madman behind bars before anyone else is hurt. And Lindsay Boxer and her new partner in the San Francisco Police Department run flat out to stop a series of kidnappings that have electrified the city. Children of rich families are being plucked off the streets together with their nannies, but the kidnappers aren't demanding ransom. Amid uncertainty and rising panic, Lindsay juggles the possibility of a new love with an unsolvable investigation and the knowledge that one member of the club could be on the brink of death. And just when everything appears momentarily under control, the case takes a terrifying turn, putting an entire city in lethal and horrifying danger. Lindsay must make a choice she never dreamed she'd face, with no certainty that either outcome has more than a prayer of success, a decision she has never made before. One that will change her life as parents everywhere expect the worst, as new assistant D.A. Yuki Castellano prepares to prosecute a high-profile trial. Detective Lindsay Boxer pursues one lead after another to capture the murderer who tried to kill her friend. However, the clues do not seem to ease the solving of the crime. Who will the sixth target be? That's a great book from James Patterson and Maxine Petro. It's called The Sixth Target. Now here's a very popular book during the month. It's actually a special companion story to the Hallmark Channel's program When Calls the Heart, and that is actually a TV series. This book is called Where Courage Calls, and it was written by Jeanette Oak and Laurel Oak Logan. Her courage and her heart will be tested in ways she never expected. Beth Thatcher has spent her entire life in the safe, comfortable world of her family, her friends, and the social outings her father's wealth provides. But Beth is about to leave it all behind to accept a teaching position in the rugged foothills of Western Canada. Inspired by her aunt, Elizabeth, who went west to teach school several years ago, and gently encouraged by her father, Beth resolves to put her trust in God and bravely face any challenge that comes her way. But the conditions in Coal Valley are even worse than she had feared. A recent mining accident has left the town grieving and at the mercy of the mining company. The children have had very little prior education, and many of the locals don't even speak English. There isn't even a proper schoolhouse. In addition, Beth's heart is torn between two young men, both Mounties, one a lifelong friend, and the other a kind, quiet man who comes to her aid more than once. Despite the many challenges, Beth is determined to make a difference in the rustic frontier town. But when her sister visits from the east, reminding her of all the luxuries she had to give up, will Beth decide to return to her privileged life as soon as the school year is over or not? Listen to this one and find out. It's called Where Courage Calls by Jeanette Oak and Laurel Oak Logan. Now, here's one I simply could not believe when I saw it on the list of the most popular books for the month of June at the North Carolina Library for the Blind. It is book number 171 of the Hardy Boys, a famous series, very popular series for everyone ages 8 to 12, particularly young men, I would say. The title of this one was The Test Case, and it's by, of course, Franklin W. Dixon. Here's how it starts in the summary. A. Joe stole the test. B. Tony stole the test. C. None of the above. A new statewide test has all the students at Bayport High on edge. Then Joe and his friend Tony find one of the tests in Tony's book bag. Joe knows Tony didn't steal it, but the assistant principal isn't so understanding. She suspends them both. Joe talks to the truck driver who delivered the tests, as well as the owner of a tutoring service who promises amazing improvements in test scores. Frank checks out who could have put the test in Tony's bag, a bag just like the one belonging to a star of the hockey team. Joe and Tony are still in the penalty box, but the Hardys are determined to ace this case. If you haven't listen to or read this one in a long time, maybe you would enjoy this. It's called The Test Case by Franklin W. Dixon, and it was book number 171 of the Hardy Boys series. Now let's take a look at a book that was one of my personal favorites within the last year, but it was also in the top 10 at the North Carolina Library for the Blind in June. It's called The Magic Strings of Frankie Presto by Mitch Albom. Journalist and best-selling author Mitch Albom wrote an unforgettable account of life lessons learned from a lovable real-life professor coming to terms with mortality. You'll recall it, I'm sure. It was called Tuesdays with Maury. With The Magic Strings of Frankie Presto, Albom again plucks at heartstrings, this time with the fictional story of Francisco Presto, a gifted guitarist and singer. Now, his life intersects with major events of the past century, from the Vietnam War to Woodstock and Hurricane Katrina, and musicians including Elvis Presley, Darlene Love, The Beatles, Lyle Lovett, and Paul Stanley from Kiss. Frankie's story is told through flashbacks and interviews with the mourners who arrive at his own funeral. Music is a character who narrates the story, with the engaging hook that everyone joins a series of bands in life, playing a different role in each one. This setup sounds like it's a little bit hokey, maybe, but it cleverly zips the reader through Frankie's saga. Born in the small village of Villarreal, Spain, during the Spanish Civil War, Francisco is abandoned throughout his young life, but music never leaves him. Left to drown as an infant by an impoverished young caretaker, he is rescued by a hairless dog and the owner of a sardine factory, who early on recognizes Francisco's gift and finds him a musical tutor who will change his life, a broken, blind alcoholic named El Maestro. El Maestro gives Francisco a guitar with magical strings provided by a gypsy. At life and death moments, those strings glow blue. As a boy, Francisco meets Aurora, the only rival for his love for music. Francisco comes to America and becomes Frankie Presto, a singer with Elvis-like charisma and similarly bad life choices. Aurora suffers through Frankie's failures and affairs, yet their bond and band endures. Albom's love for music is richly apparent, and the cameos by famous musicians make Frankie a cross between Fabian and Forrest Gump. Frankie and Aurora are a compelling couple, but fiction and life could use a few fewer instances of a woman suffering all for her genius mate, even when his excesses hurt her most. Frankie is no Maury, but few men are. Music gets a little preachy at times, but his maxims about life will no doubt bring readers on a pleasantly sentimental journey about the bandmates in their lives. If you haven't read or listened to this one, I think you will enjoy it. I certainly recommend it. It's called The Magic Strings of Frankie Presto by Mitch Albom. Now let's turn to our next book that was really popular during the month of June, and it is from the very popular mystery writer Sue Grafton. You know, every couple of years, fans of Sue Grafton's Alphabet Mystery series are just over the moon. I think she started, I'm not sure when, many years ago with A is for Alibi. I remember that one. Continued on up. V is for Vengeance is one in the last couple of years, and so forth. But one that just came out within the last year or so is called Kenzie and Me Stories. And this was published privately by Sue Grafton in 1991. There were only 300 copies made, and they were made for Grafton's friends and family. This is the first publication for the general public of this book, Kenzie and Me Stories. It's perfect for the uber fans of Sue Grafton because it gathers in one place 9 previously published short stories, mostly in magazines and anthologies, about the super sleuth. Now, it also offers a closer look at what makes Grafton tick. The 13 semi-autobiographical Kit Blue stories are also included in the collection, and they go a long way toward explaining why the book is called Kenzie and Me, not Kenzie and Kit. If Kenzie is my alter ego, Kit Blue is simply a younger version of me, writes Grafton in an introduction that precedes the Kit stories. She shares in them what she calls that rage, that pain, all the scalding tears of her younger self and all its heartbreak. The Kenzie stories and the Kit stories together open a window into Grafton's soul. The Kenzie stories, published between 1986 and 91, spotlight the short story as an art form. Each one, including the darkly comedic Falling Off the Roof, in which Kenzie joins a book club and nearly turns the final page on her own life, exemplifies Grafton's writing prowess. The Kit Blue stories are completely different. They were written in the 10 years after the death of Grafton's mother on Grafton's 20th birthday. In these stories, Kit's mother was a barely functioning alcoholic. Her father was a heavy drinker, too. The stories follow the young Kit from childhood to adulthood, more mother to her mother than her child. The stories are filled with confusion, anger, helplessness, and profound sadness for Kit's lost childhood, and the loss of her mother to drink and then to a horrific form of cancer. Grafton deserves thanks for bringing back the Kenzie stories. She's to be applauded for the compelling Kit stories and for what one can't but think is bravery for sharing them. Very interesting book from Sue Grafton. It's called Kenzie and Me Stories. Here's another popular book for this summer, The Ice Limit, it's called, by Douglas J. Preston and Lincoln Child. The largest known meteorite has been discovered, entombed in the earth for millions of years on a frigid, desolate island off the southern tip of Chile. At 4,000 tons, this treasure seems impossible to move. New York billionaire Palmer Lloyd is determined to have this incredible find for his new museum. Stocking a cargo ship with the finest scientists and engineers, he builds a flawless expedition. But from the first approach to the meteorite, people begin to die. A frightening truth is about to unfold. The men and women of the Rolvag are not taking this ancient enigmatic object anywhere. It is taking them. Sounds very mysterious. It's called The Ice Limit. and it's by Douglas J. Preston and Lincoln Child. Now, here's a very interesting book, I think, that is not a novel. It is called Sidewalking, written by David L. Ulin, U-L-I-N, and it offers a compelling inquiry into the evolving landscape of Los Angeles. Part personal narrative, part investigation of the city as both idea and environment. Sidewalking is many things: a discussion of Los Angeles as urban space, a history of the city's built environment, a meditation on the author's relationship to the city of Los Angeles, and a rumination on the art of urban walking. Exploring Los Angeles through the soles of his feet, Ulin gets the experience of its street life, drawing from urban theory, pop culture, and literature. For readers interested in the culture of Los Angeles, this book offers a pointed look beneath the surface in order to see and engage with the city on its own terms. Very interesting book, not a novel, which is fairly unusual for the most popular books from the North Carolina Library for the Blind in any given month, but it's one that I think you might enjoy if you have any interest at all in Los Angeles or a study of a particular major city. It's called Sidewalking, and it's by David L. Ulin, that is spelled U-L-I-N. And I think we have time for just one more on this particular program. This is a book called The Bullet, and it's written by former NPR correspondent Mary Louise Kelly, and it's a heart-pounding story about fear, family secrets, and one woman's hunt for answers about the murder of her parents. Here's the plot. Caroline Cashin, a professor of French literature at Georgetown University, is stunned when an MRI reveals that she has a bullet lodged near the base of her skull. It makes no sense. She has never been shot. She has no entry wound, no scar. When she confronts her parents, they initially profess bewilderment. Then, over the course of one awful evening, she learns the truth. She was adopted when she was 3 years old, after her real parents were murdered in cold blood. Caroline had been there the night of the attack, and she was hit by a single gunshot to the neck. Buried too deep among vital nerves and blood vessels, the surgeons had left it in and stitched up the traumatized little girl with the bullet still left inside. That was 34 years ago, and now Caroline returns to her hometown to learn whatever she can about how and who her parents were and why they died. Along the way, she meets a cop who worked the case, who reveals that even after all these years, the police do not have enough evidence to nail the killer, and the killer is still at large. Sounds very interesting. It's called The Bullet by Mary Louise Kelly. And that's all for this month's edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately? I'm George Douglas. I hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like more information about how to become a patron of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, simply Google or search for the North Carolina Library for the Blind, or you can call toll-free 1-888-388-2460. You can also use those same numbers to join the Friends Group of the North Carolina Library for the Blind. This program is intended for a blind and visually impaired audience. Heard Any Good Books Lately? Will be available right after this broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time.